Welcome to the Black House right here on Wellington Access Radio 106.1 FM. Leah, how are you doing?
Not too bad. You know how it is.
You know, as you get into the QE thing of saying, how are you going?
How are you going? Oh,
well, I never understand that, guys.
What do you say? Where you come from?
How are you doing? How are you doing?
You actually say it in full English language.
But we just say how you. We say how are you doing? Like, you know.
How you doing?
Well, how's it?
How you doing?
Yeah, how are you doing? Something. Yeah, that's fine. That's fine as well. But how are you going? The first time someone said that to me, I was just like, I'm walking. Yeah, I guess I don't have a car, so I'll be walking.
There's a lot of weird slang in New Zealand.
See you later is another one of them.
See you later.
Ah, where are you seeing me? Where? Like,
but why is that weird?
Are you stalking me? Why? Why are you seeing me later? I don't know you.
Because he wants to see you.
No. I just literally.
Do you mean like only certain people can say that to you?
If you know me.
Okay. So could I say see you later?
You can say see you later to me. Yeah. Cool.
Or do I have to say see you later? Maybe not.
If there's a gig or something we're attending together.
Okay.
See you later.
All right.
Because we take it in the literal sense. Because the first time someone said that to me, I was like, huh?
Where? Oh my gosh.
Part of the joys of learning, you know, the slang in this country. It's like, oh, okay, cool. Some of it I've just.
What about Ian?
I watch this guy called Aussie Man.
My favorite. I love that guy. So cool.
I watch this guy called Aussie Man. And, you know, I like.
He's from Western Australia. He's from Perth, that guy.
Yeah.
So, and that's actually how they talk.
So when he says Ian, I'm like, oh, okay, cool. That sounds cool. But it also ties to what we also say.
What's that?
When you ask an African a question, maybe let me say Southern African, we'll answer you by denying and then accepting, or accepting then denying.
So give me an example.
Okay, for instance, so did you guys go out last night? Yeah, no, we went out.
Yeah, we went out.
So you're not sure. Yeah means is literally derived from Afrikaans to say yes.
Something bad is gonna come next.
It sounds like it.
That's what it sounds like.
But that's how we talk. Oh. Yeah, no, we went out.
Uh-huh.
So did you go and get your car yesterday? Yeah, no, I got it. Yeah. Okay, yes. No. No. What are you saying, dude? What are you saying? So we say we first accept yes we did. No we didn't. Mm. And then we come back to saying yes we did.
So when you hear Kiwi say, yeah, nah.
It's the same. Like, yeah, no.
No. It's so weird.
It's very, very weird. I mean, if someone is going to take, like, you know, if you wake up someone, say, from the dead, or they were in a coma in the 60s or something, and then you bring them and say, this is how people are speaking now.
They'll be lost.
They'll be very, very lost. First of all, there's cell phones. There's all the stuff that they cannot understand.
Yeah, no.
Welcome to the Black House, everyone. Wellington Access Radio 106.1.
Mm-hmm.
How was your week? How was your weekend last weekend?
The weekend last weekend. Try babysitting a short midget that has drunken Tourette's. You know
what
I mean?
That sounds fun.
I mean, I became sober and I was just like, okay, I give up. I just give up.
It's funny because you say you went there. I was so shocked. You said you went there, and at the same time, I'm also getting shocked. I'm like, okay, I only got there after midnight.
Well, as I was going out, which was probably midnight to 12:30, Eddie was coming in, and I was like, gotta check on.
I didn't even see him.
I didn't see Eddie.
It turns out all of us were there, but somewhat at different times. So we played tag team, like, you know.
No, I just, you know, kind of turned into like, okay, babysitting mode.
That sucks.
But it's kind of funny with that guy. Because it was like, everywhere, you're not coming in here, you're not coming in. And then finally got in somewhere, and it was like, I was like, damn, what age is everybody in this place? And I'm like, look at it, I'm like, how old are you?
I felt old in there. Or maybe because I was sober.
In El Barrio?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I was very sober. I was.
Well, like, it looks like the place we ended up in. I might put it out there. Because I don't want to put anyone on. But to me, it looked like they were like 15.
Yeah.
Unless young 18-year-olds and 20-year-olds are looking way younger.
They look younger, yeah. Because I saw they actually took a while to get in because they were checking ID and all.
So right.
When I got
and I always laugh at that.
When I got there, they're just like, you can go, and I'm just like, come on, I'm trying to say I don't look young anymore. I thought I was the fountain of youth.
Yeah.
But yeah.
But I mean, I still get asked, and it's like, I still have to carry my ID, and I'm just looking at them like, really? Really? Do you actually look at the year?
Lucky you. Lucky you, because when they look at me, they just say, no, you can go in, man, you can go in. So it just feels like, I look at my body frame, and I'm like, okay, I've got a bit of a belly.
That's your dad bought.
I guess I couldn't have that.
So you're settling into it, so that's good.
Man.
You know, like, it's going to happen. I've
admitted it, man. I've accepted. That's a dad bought. But at least ask me for my ID. Make me feel like I'm young, at least. Try. Yeah.
Yeah. I was kind of feeling it in this club because all these young people get running up to me going, oh my God, I love your hair. Oh my God, I love your outfit. I'm like, Shane. Stand with us. You know, when the organization that begins with an F tries to mess with our chin and Timu time.
Better get all the clothes you can now. That's what I'll say. Better get all the clothes you can.
Get everything you need now.
And one of the things that's been happening...
Before they start charging you for shipping.
One thing that's also been happening this week in that respect as well was the New Zealand Post suspending all packages going out to the US because of the 30% tariff that's kicked in. Yes. I saw that yesterday. I saw the headline yesterday.
Okay, so he's put a tariff on New Zealand. Does he know that we're poor? There's only 300 families here that have any money. Like, why are you putting that all on us?
I don't know what the thinking behind it is, but yeah, the whole tariff thing is going to... It's rocking the world. It's rocking the world, to say the least. And look, come for me if you want to, but it affects all of us one way or another. And a lot of jobs are getting lost. I know in South Africa, in the Eastern Cape, they just closed down a plant, a tire manufacturing plant. And obviously, it's affected by all this as well. And there are car manufacturers also thinking of closing their plants in South Africa as well. Like, I think the Mercedes-Benz plant.
God.
Yeah, so that's a lot of jobs lost, a lot of families affected. Let me not say a lot of families, a lot of black and people of color.
Yeah.
Who are affected, because they're the ones who are the workers in those factories.
That's actually making me think now, because, you know, I have a one-track mind with this, with these people over here, but... My advice is, like what you said, buy everything now. Make sure you've got the right measurements, because then you don't have to return nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true, because we don't know what's going to happen in the next few months.
I mean, oh, my God. It's crazy. But to me, it's crazy. Like, what is he trying to do? Is he trying to circle? What is he trying to do? Like, I don't know what he's trying to achieve.
It's probably just rearranging trade. I mean, you will have that happening for once in a while, you know. But some presidents take it. They have drastic measures for it. So we'll just wait it out and see what's going to happen, because...
What do we get from America exactly?
I can only think of one thing for now, because I love it. The popcorn. The popcorn. I know it sounds stupid of me, but that's what I can think of, because that's the thing.
Do we need them? I mean, do we need all their beef? Like, do we need all their beef? Is it our beef to carry? Who's sidling up to Trump and his cronies?
But we are an ally.
Why?
I don't know.
They keep getting it. It's like you're a friend with a friend who just wants to start beef all the time. Like, why do we want to be his friend? Why don't we just walk away? And go, you start too many scraps over nothing. We don't need your nonsense. You stay over there. Leave us alone.
You can't leave your friend at the club when he starts a beef. You have to be there.
I can. No. And if the friend's in the wrong, I'll say, make sure you whip her hard then.
Damn.
Yeah. Like, don't be stupid. No, like, we gotta, like, why are we so embedded with them? What are they? Do they give us free shipping? No. Are they getting us cost, you know, cut price clothing? No.
You know what I would actually love? If anything, if manufacturing was brought to New Zealand, you know, when it comes to vehicles and all these other things that they have, you know, they're big on their Teslas, which are seemingly failing these days. I'd be big on it if...
There used to be a lot of manufacturing here.
Yeah.
But they got rid of it in the 80s somewhere.
Exactly. But I what I'm saying is if they brought back the manufacturing, then I'll say, okay, cool, yeah, we can side with you. But it seems like this relationship is a one-way street.
To me, it seems like that. It seems like we're dragged in because Australia is really close to them. Mm-hmm. And because Australia's our biggest trading partner, now we're dragged into the mess. It just sounds, for me, it feels like an African drama. You know what I mean? Like a Nollywood.
I was about to say Nollywood. Man, oh man, I miss those dramas. I don't miss them. I miss them.
But this is what it feels like. It feels like, oh my God, there he goes again. Yeah. All right, so now we got to stand over here and wait for what?
No, we'll just wait and see, man. We'll wait and see how it plays out because there's a lot that's in play. And yeah.
So, listen, the aunties will not appreciate anyone messing with their Sheen and Temu time. I'm just telling you, they don't know what fight they've picked.
Talking about this weekend, you know which weekend it is today?
Is that it's a fight or something? Or
No.
What is it?
What happened to you outside today?
Wilson's?
No. that. What led to that?
No parking.
Uh-huh.
Right.
What's the date?
Today is the 23rd. I've been in a cave. Like,
there we go. I'm bringing you out of the cave.
Right.
Did you notice the city?
Yeah, I noticed there wasn't many cars around.
There's not many cars around.
Yeah,
when you didn't get parking. Oh, in Newtown.
In Newtown.
Everyone is converging here.
Why?
It's pay weekend.
Ah. Okay.
It's pay weekend. It started. So this weekend, next weekend, likely going to be busy. Because we've got money.
Oh.
Yeah.
All these monthly pay. Uh-huh. Well, I don't know how you can handle it in these
days. I told you. Like, observe. Just see when the weekend of between the 20th and, like, the 30th.
Right.
Because most people get paid, like, say, from about 20th.
I'm just still shocked that people are getting paid monthly if you're not in a government job.
Yeah.
Like, I understood government jobs that pay you monthly, but I had no idea the rest of the country went, you can wait for 4 weeks.
Yeah, there's a couple of people who get paid every month, and then there's some who get paid. I think a lot of companies are moving towards the bi-monthly system.
So they're going to take bi-monthly workers too?
Every 2 weeks. So, yeah.
Turn up the week before I get paid too. Are you serious?
I think they'll just look at your eyes and be like, huh, okay.
Yeah. I mean, they're not really doing much to encourage people to be enthusiastic about it. I mean, the wages are pretty low.
No one really wants low-wage work. That's right.
Then getting paid monthly on top of that.
I mean, you look at the kids these days. The kids these days are always, you know, on these trading platforms, trading crypto, Bitcoin, and all that other stuff. So they're like, huh, why get paid monthly when I can just get paid every day?
Yeah.
That's the life, quote-unquote, the life they live.
That's the life when they come. You need to have classes for older people like me so I can kind of get my head around it. I know my oldest son knows about that.
Yeah.
I don't get it. All this math, I was never good at it.
Yeah. I think we just don't like the risk that comes with online things.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So would you want to jump into it? Like, should we jump into it or do you want to go to a track first?
Let me soothe your mind.
Yeah.
For you to jump into it.
Okay.
Greetings to Soulwood. This is Ferris Sanders. setting the scene with Pharoah Sanders there.
Sounds very bubbly and sparkly, and it's, I'm not going to be talking about bubbly and sparkly.
Well, at some point, I mean, they did chill by the beach, you know.
At some point.
Watch the sunsets.
Before somebody came and macheted their head or something.
Exactly.
You know, it was blood and guts. There was a lot of blood and guts, apparently. But, so I'm just going to retrack a little bit and look at the whaling mariners. Mm-hmm. That was happening, the sailors and the whalers, because you started with the sailors and then the whalers came out late 1700s. And this was all at a time when the British slave trade was still raging on. They were actually one of the biggest traders of all slave traders. They were bigger than the Americans. They were the biggest. Right.
Don't say that. Americans don't like that.
Americans don't like...
They don't like being the biggest. Not being the biggest.
Not big... Well,
yeah.
Sorry. They did. Britain did pretty well.
Yeah, no, they did.
In this thing. So, if the Atlantic slave trade started in early 1500s, right? Mm-hmm. And so the first English slave trading voyage, Sir John Hawkins led England's first known slave trading expedition, and they were going to West Africa and selling them in the Spanish Caribbean. And then there was the formation of the Royal African Company in 1672, and they were granted a royal charter giving by King Charles II, giving it a monopoly on English trade in enslaved Africans, and this marked the institutionalization, the expansion of Britain's involvement in slavery. So that's 1672. So in the 1700s, that was the peak of British involvement in transatlantic slavery. So they were the largest slave trading nation in the 18th century, which is the 1700s. British ships transported an estimated 3.1 million Africans, about one third of all enslaved Africans in the transatlantic slave trade. And the first enslaved Africans that were sent to English colonies, and they're classified as indentured servants, with legal standing similar to that of contract-based workers coming from Britain and Ireland. But by the middle of the 17th century, slavery had hardened as a racial caste. So they had to separate the indentured servants that were white from black slaves. Mm-hmm. So I think it's, I think there was an Indentured Servants Act or something. So with African slaves and their future offspring being legally the property of their owners, as children born to mothers were also slaves. So that's the partus sequitur ventrum. So this is this thing that they actually did it in the States first.
Yeah.
And then, and it's a legal doctrine passed in colonial Virginia in 1662 and other English crown colonies and in the Americas, which defined the legal status of children born there. The doctrine mandated that children of mothers who were slaves would inherit the legal status of their mothers. So if the mother was a slave, you were born a slave.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's weird now when you have such a happening, and then now when your parents are New Zealanders, you might have a difficulty actually getting citizenship if you're born outside. Mm. I actually was reading off one case like that this week. I think it's one of these artists from Auckland.
Mm.
He's having a problem registering his children.
Where?
Here in New Zealand for citizenship.
And he's a New Zealander?
Yeah, he's back. He's back home.
Mm-hmm.
And he's having troubles getting them to be.
Which is interesting, because has this birthing rights discussion come from what was originally done back in 1662?
Probably.
With partus sequitur ventrum?
Yeah.
You are who your mother is?
Yeah.
Is it connected, do you think?
I think it is. I think it is.
So now they're trying to erase it.
Erase it. So that.
But that's how they could breed more slaves and more money for themselves.
Yes.
Yeah. Right.
So now it's not beneficial to the system.
Mm.
So why should your kids have your citizenship? when they were not born here.
Right.
So there's that confusion. And he was just speaking of how he's, I think he's already paid over $16,000 now in trying to just get his kids to be New Zealanders. So now they are listed as having overstayed. Yeah, something like that.
What the heck?
Yeah, they were born in Hawaii. I'll try and find the story, man. But I read it this week.
That is crazy.
It was just interesting.
Because I thought that, I didn't know that it was actually here as well.
Oh, yeah, it is. It is.
Wow.
Ooh, I think I read it 2 or 3 days ago. Like, literally, that's how fresh in my mind it is.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it's one of those stories where I just read random stories during the week.
You're a bit like me. You got all this information coming in. Now you got to sort it all out so you can talk about it.
Yeah.
So that's the, that was the English, this was where England, the English colonies, and how they were, the sugar situation, having all these sugar plantations all over the Caribbean and then eventually Australia. But this was about, you know, if you've seen the video that I put up on our YouTube, I just tagged it in there. It actually tells the story of the British slave plantations, and they're pretty horrific. Like, the life of a slave on a British plantation was about 10 years.
10 years?
Yeah.
Jeez.
10 years, because it was the sugar mills and that operated 24 hours a day. Some of those island nations became only sugar. That's the only thing they grew. So there was a lot of illness and not enough food. So there was a lot of things that were happening to slaves that meant that they weren't reproducing themselves where they are. And so Britain had to keep going and getting more slaves
getting
and
more
replacing
slaves
them
yeah.
to replace the labor stock that they had.
And I mean, if the labor stock does reproduce, how many years until the reproduction can actually start producing
so
for them?
This is why they went through so many of them.
Makes sense.
So while all of this stuff was going on, and, you know, now we're in the 17th century, 1700s or 18th century. I never understand why they call the 1700s the 18th century.
Mm-hmm.
And the 1800s are not, you know, but anyway, the 1700s, they're the largest slave trading nation in the world, pretty much. And pretty much the sun never sets on the British Empire.
Okay.
Right? They're everywhere. Just the overseas possessions are crazy. Like the amount of countries that, you know, land positions in North America, you had Newfoundland, you had Roanoke Colony, another one that disappeared. Massachusetts, the Virginia Company in 1606. Jamestown, Bermuda. You know, the list goes on. You can look it up on Wiki. It's just insane how many colonies they had. And then in the West Indies, you had Barbados, St. Kitts, Nevis, Province Island, Montserrat, Antigua, the Bahamas, Anguilla. I don't know if that's how that's pronounced.
Yeah.
And Jamaica, Barbuda. Not Bermuda, Barbuda, but they also had Barbados.
Yeah.
And Bermuda, I think. And, yeah, it was just insane. There's just so many places. India and the East Indies. So this is all the geopolitical background for when whalers and sailors are arriving in New Zealand.
Mm.
Some of them were escaping all of that, you know. Some of them were getting away from it all.
Imagine escaping to being a whaler. Jeez, man.
Because to me it's like, you know, it's out of the fire into the frying pan.
Exactly. I was actually just trying to find the phrase for that. But yeah literally, it's a rock in a hard place.
Yeah.
It's a rock in a hard place.
1769 to 1777, James Cook makes three voyages.
Mm-hmm.
Late 1700s to 1830s, British, American, French whalers, sailors, and traders frequented Aotearoa, particularly the Bay of Islands, bringing all sorts of nasties like firearms, disease. Christianity is one that's nasty, but it really depended what side of the fence you sat on, because I keep reading how the sailors and the sealers and the whalers did not like the missionaries at all.
Yeah, no, they didn't.
Because the missionaries were like about purity, and they're all about you got to be like, you know, they're like, you're not supposed, and the whaling folk, the mariners, how can I just say the whalers, right? They're there when they come to port, they're there to have a good time. They yep. want to spend their money, mm-hmm. meet some women, do what they do, drink rum. And these Christian guys are here trying to mess it all up for them.
Sounds a bit like the fire for workers.
It does. So much like that.
You fly in, you go work, you fly out, you go have fun.
Yeah.
And then you go back and you go work again. I mean, it's literally you just getting real, giving yourself some downtime.
And the funny thing is that I don't know if people realize this. I know I didn't. I know that the Treaty of Waitangi was signed in 1840, but mm-hmm. up until then, New Zealand wasn't a colonised country. It was a country where people were coming in to access whales, access seals, maybe do some trade.
Yeah.
Maybe they're trying to find the big land in the south, the mystery. I don't know if that was supposed to be Antarctica or what it was. And they're coming down and they're having these interactions with indigenous here, and not all of them are good.
Yeah.
Some of them are really bad, but then there's some that actually live and stay. You know, they end up staying with the Māori, and they end up being part, if it was, you know, and from what they if it was of use to Māori.
Yeah.
If it wasn't, you could end up in the pot, but
jeez.
Yeah. So there was skirmishes, a lot of skirmishes, a lot of fights, you know, between whalers, sealers, and Māori over different things.
I mean, like in any case, if you try and come and disturb my way of life, it's like you get into my house,
yeah.
You want to put the sugar basin in a different place from where I put it. I mean, I'm pedantic like that.
Yeah.
Hey, come on.
What are you doing? You've offended us.
Yeah,
right,
you've offended
off of
me.
Your head.
Uh-huh. Come on, you're changing the position of the tissue.
You know?
I want to tear it from underneath, not from the top.
But what's fascinating to me is when I'm looking at different reports on different things about either whalers or sealers or both.
Yeah.
People of colour are left out, even though they are in the narrative, they're left out of the story. They make it look like the only people who came here were white Europeans, when that's not the case. It was very multicultural.
Yeah.
And, you know, Balich has written about this. Who else is there? There's been some other people that have written about this button-down blog that I looked at. So when you think about what was going on globally, to me, it seems pretty obvious that the people that would end up on whaling or sailing ships or you know, even, you know, how they're getting transported to Australia from some British colonies, and then, oh, we don't want to stay in Australia, let's jump on this boat, eh? And jump on a boat and keep going. Because Australia was really just a open-air prison. You know, you had people that you, I think the word was ticketing, and you had to stay with in the service of somebody, or you get given this, and you have to, and you can't go anywhere without these tickets.
Yes, it's similar to the system that was happening in during the apartheid era in South Africa.
The pass
system.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. It's. I think it's. That's. It's a system that they were just using to keep track and keep monitoring these commodities, these human commodities, where they were and what they're doing.
And they're all connected, and it's connected, even if they were coming from Nantucket, you know, northeastern side of, you know, north of New York, up in that area there with Nantucket and Rhode Island stuff. Even if they were coming on whaling ships from there, it was to escape what was going on land, right? A lot of them, the stuff that I've been reading, and of course, there's definitely colonial archives I can't get to because they're either offshore or they just haven't been digitized, right? But from what I can tell, like, a lot of the black men that got into whaling in America, they were getting into it because A, it was paid them better. B, you're not likely to get re-enslaved or killed unless it's, and I think the respect of you being a man that's doing a job, you know what I mean? Like, that's, you're respected for being a person as opposed to you're a slave.
Yeah.
And I think there was an attraction there, even though the work was so dangerous. I mean, can you imagine how they used to chase those whales? It's crazy.
Yeah, I think the whale will probably have me first.
Yeah. But you've got a harpooner, you've got this little boat, you've got to chase it down, then you harpoon the whale, and you have to make sure you hold on to that, whatever the harpoon's attached to. And then the boats looked like they only had like about 10 men on them in the most.
Mm.
How are you, and you're catching these massive beasts, right?
I'm always fascinated, you know, firstly by marine life and what goes on around marine life in terms of what we do, in terms of the vessels we use around marine life. I think even with a big vessel, I just feel like, there's water around me.
Mm.
Water is life, water is dangerous. Now with these small little boats, come on, guys.
Yeah.
Come on, the risk was
I think lot. It was definitely like... It definitely gives me the whole, you know, I'd rather be out here doing this than on land. Yeah, that's an obvious. But there's a certain death wish with this job. You have to be unafraid of that. And I've seen it in the eyes of some miners that think they can work underground and then they get to the entry and they completely freak out because suddenly now you're going down in a hole that could at any time collapse on you. So you always say before you go to work, you always ring your family, and when you come home, you ring your family.
Yeah.
Because every time you go down the hole, you don't know if you're going to come up again. So it gives me that kind of vibe, but without all the safety precautions. Like,
I could never actually do an occupation like that.
You couldn't?
I couldn't.
Oh, I love it. But you definitely have to be a certain... Yeah, I was underground.
Yeah, I mean, I always respect when I hear that. It's just like, geez, mine is a mixer.
But you see,
risk for me is electricity, really.
I'm a little weird, though, because, you know, I did anthropology and sociology at uni, so I was down there. Yeah, I was doing my job, but I was also looking for fossils. I was looking for anything.
Means to an end.
Yeah, that was fascinating to me.
Did you find any fossils?
Nah, not really. No. No.
Just got a lot
I'm sure people have.
Just got a lot of money.
Well, depends on who you work for. It ain't that great, you know.
Yeah.
But so this is the environment that these men at a time prior to the Treaty of Waitangi, prior to, you know, sure, James has said, yeah, there's an island down here. But nothing really happened from the UK in the sense, but well, there was the land groups.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So the land groups.
What were the land groups?
Well, one of them, let me just find it here. And this is where, again, we come back around to the slave ownership.
Okay.
Right? So I think it was the New Zealand Company. It's one of those ones. But, for example, the connections to British slavery, New Zealand's connections to British slavery. I'll just read you a little bit from this article. Following the abolition of slavery throughout the British Empire in 1833, the British government awarded a massive sum of £20 million in compensation, payable not to the former slaves or their descendants, but to the slave owners. Ellis received just over £8,120 compensation for the loss of his former human chattels. Ellis, like many other New Zealand company directives, never actually came to New Zealand, but he is far from alone in providing a New Zealand connection with Caribbean slavery. Yeah. As a 2024 Stuff article noted, the slave trade contributed to the global expansion of European powers, including Britain, through resources gained by exploiting enslaved people, and it helped finance Britain's colonial advancement around the globe, including, of course, in New Zealand. So all of my life, I have been told that New Zealand had nothing to do with slavery.
Yeah.
But in fact, what I thought from reading, just doing this reading, and just sort of going, hey, this is really fascinating that there were black people in New Zealand. And they said, there were black people here. Oh, my God. New Zealand is connected.
It's there.
Yeah, that connection's there. So the timing of the compensation scheme, so close to the advent of mass British migration to New Zealand after 1840, meant some of those migrants could have been beneficiaries of that scheme, and the capital they brought with them to the colony would therefore ultimately have been derived, at least in part, from slavery. And that's an article by, it's called Unsettling Aotearoa New Zealand History. Appropriate name. May 23, 2025. New Zealand's connections to the Caribbean slavery. So I think it's important to acknowledge that.
Yeah.
You know, instead of sort of, you know, I've actually heard even on news articles on television, people say, we've had no connection to slavery.
Oh, yes, it was then.
But clearly, if your money is coming from the fact that you had slaves and you could sell them and then you could get compensated for owning them and then you bring all that, then that's contributing.
Mm.
You know.
What kills me is the fact that Russell Ellis was, you know, like an investor.
He was an investor.
You know how you have, when you talk to the CEO or, you know, the board chairman doesn't live in this country, but the company is in this country. You never meet him.
And it looks like with the New Zealand company, there were a few people who were slave owners that invested in this. So American-born Francis Baring, the late 3rd Baron Ashburton, after whom Baring Head, now officially Baring Head, Arua Poanui in Whanganui Atara, Wellington Harbour, was named as a key figure behind the New Zealand Company and later the Canterbury Association. He was also awarded a huge sum of $57,000 as mortgagee owner of 10,079 slaves across 8 separate Caribbean sugar plantations.
This New Zealand company. This money would change my life.
It would change lives, right? Well, you know, what it does is it enables colonists to afford to actually go, we're just going to start a company, we're just going to colonise this place.
Yeah.
That's where the money came from.
You know, when I look at such stories, I always think to myself, when it comes to infrastructure and building and all the like, who do they credit all these things to? If they say that slavery wasn't the thing, yeah.
Unnamed corporations.
Yeah. Because I look at it this way. We could actually have... We... Recently, I was also reading up on this, on why there isn't, like, a road or a tunnel that leads to the South Island.
Right.
How expensive it would be to construct. And why it cannot be burdened onto the taxpayer and the 5 million plus minus 5 million people in New Zealand right now.
I think it would be brilliant if we had a road over there.
It would be brilliant. It would be lovely.
Yeah.
But the country simply cannot afford it, and there won't be really an ROI. There won't be a return on investment when it comes to that road. So the ferries make sense.
Right.
And even the one that just got decommissioned this past week,
you know more about what's going on out there. I've been so locked on this thing all week. So
I'm connecting back to what you are talking about, because there's a ferry that's been decommissioned, and the one that's set to replace it in 2029 still hasn't had a contract signed for it. And, you know, nothing's being said about it, and there's all these questions around it, to say, okay, cool, you've decommissioned this one here, where's the next one?
Yeah.
And had it been the times of slavery, this is me just thinking out of the box.
Yeah.
Had it been the times of slavery and the times where the New Zealand company existed, we probably would have had a number of those buddies of ours working to build the what? The road to the South Island.
And the tunnel.
Yeah.
You probably have both. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, the fact that Australia right now, and with its history, blackbirding and whatnot, is now the biggest sugar growers in the world.
Yeah.
This shows that the backs and the labor, that's what built it. You know,
and it simply won't be admitted.
No.
It will never be admitted.
But we're going to admit it right here.
Yeah.
We're going to admit it right here.
Yeah.
But, okay, so, like, in this time, too, you got to, now I'll just scan down a little bit. Some other key dates we have to keep in mind during the 1700s, right?
Yeah.
Is that you had all these wars. So you had the Seven Years' War, 1756 to 1763, the American War of Independence, 1775 to 1783, the Haitian Revolution, 1791 to 1804. Mm-hmm. That's when all the slaves got up and went, nope, not today. And you had the British Abolition Wars, or British Naval Wars against slave trade, which is 1807 to 1867, which I find really interesting because apparently they never really stopped. British never really stopped using slave labor until a generation later.
Yeah.
So then you also had the antebellum period, approximately 1812 to 1861, Bussa's Rebellion in Barbados, 1816, Demerara Rebellion in Guyana, Baptist War in Jamaica, American Civil War, this is getting later in the 1800s, and the Reconstruction period of 1865 to 1877. And there's also a period that Britain had for, which was the apprenticeship period, when they got rid of, when they said, okay, we're not going to do slaving anymore, and they put them into this apprenticeship thing where they're still getting next to nothing.
Apprenticeship.
It's called an apprenticeship period,
It just reminds me of internships.
I'm looking at whalers, because it did come up in a couple of readings I did, that whalers just didn't, some of the guys that got on these whaling ships and sailing ships just didn't want to be a part of any of that shit.
Yeah.
They just wanted out, you know. They wanted away from conviction and away from, you know, open-air prison. They wanted off America's shore because, you know, if slaves are now so-called free, which when did that happen, and then you're going to get killed because now you're a competition for labor.
Oh, yeah.
Or you can get re-enslaved because somebody doesn't want to go by the rules.
Mm-hmm.
And you could get, you know, anything that you build burnt to the ground. So it's, I think that the set, that the, and I wouldn't call this period of whalers and sailors the colonization period.
Yeah.
It was like pre the colonization period. And the there's that twist, there's that juxtaposition of missionaries coming in going, we need to, like, the people here, they're terrible, they're all, you know, it's like Sodom and Gomorrah in these whaling ports, and the whalers just basically giving them the finger and saying, get out of our face. And if you acted like one of them, if you acted like a missionary, there was actually a slang term for it.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, it's something tight. Wait, I have to find it. So, I'll find it. But that was like, don't act like that, because that is, we don't like that. It was a derogatory reference.
Yeah.
You know, if you acted like you were a guy that was, if you were reading and writing, you'd be called acting like a missionary.
Yeah.
But they had this funny way of saying it. So I don't know if I saved it on here. But yeah, there's just, I'm just thinking this period, I'm surprised that there's been no movie. I keep thinking, why has there been no movie? And also, very multicultural.
Mm-hmm.
These ships came out, there were Lascars, there were, and they could have been from East Africa or the islands of East Africa. There's Seychelles, Cape Verdeans, Africans, people from the Caribbean that were probably maybe their parents were picked up, but the rate that they went through slaves in the British colonies and in the Caribbean, I would think that some of those people that ended up being transported, they were probably were originally born in Africa anyway. If you think about the lifespan of a slave in the Caribbean on a sugar plantation, so short and torturous.
Damn.
Torturous work. So those were just some, you know, other individuals that pop up in legacies of slave ownership databases, like this William Wakefield, Edward's brother, who led the New Zealand Company settlement in Wellington, married into families with colonial wealth. Some of their wider network of investor patrons and directors of the New Zealand Company, like Russell Ellis and Francis Baring, were direct beneficiaries of slave compensation. The Wakefields, I think, well, from what I've read here, the Wakefields' colonization schemes were financially underpinned by men whose capital was freed up after abolition. So while Edward and William may not have directly owned plantations, they were part of a slavery compensation-funded colonial enterprise, which is interesting. I'm wondering, like, how many more
enterprises were out there?
Were out there that ended up part of here. The Wakefields themselves did not directly own slaves, but their New Zealand colonisation project was funded and sustained by British investors who had been slave owners. Another one, John Milburn Stokes, immigrated to New Zealand in 1840. By the time of his death in 1880, he, along with his brother Robert Stokes, owned 30,000 acres in New Zealand. He and his brother inherited upon their father's death in 1819 one quarter share in the proceeds from the sale of a slave plantation lease in Jamaica, including 33 enslaved people. This indicates that the Stokes brothers' initial capital and their ability to accumulate land in New Zealand was in part derived from his inheritance tied to slavery.
Wow.
Stokes Valley, folks. And then this last one, and I've had a little chat with a woman who was going to petition to have the street name. When I saw it was Picton Ave, Newtown, I was like, yeah, where is that? So Picton was a servant of empire. He was also a slave owner for his brutal treatment of slaves, and at Picton's own home country of Wales. Steps have been taken in recent years to acknowledge his slavery connections, and in 2020, for example, Cardiff City Council voted to remove his statue from the Heroes of Wales display.
So it's been removed.
That's what, in 2020,
mm-hmm,
they voted to remove it. Has it been actually removed?
I wonder if it has, actually.
I'd have to look that up. I knew you were going to ask me a question I haven't looked up. I knew you were going to do that. So...
Really,
so I came across this news article and I was like, there's a Picton Ave in Newtown?
Yeah.
And so, you know, I just jumped on the messenger and I went,
and they might say that, no, it's not that Picton.
Yeah, and I was like, is this petition still going?
I wonder.
And yeah, we're gonna have a yarn. Because, like, maybe it should be still going. Maybe we need to get rid of these old slave ownery names around the country. What do you think?
I think we should actually, yeah. I've seen it happen in so many countries,
mm-hmm,
where they actually remove the names of, you know, the slave traders, the colonialists. Mm-hmm. But there's a certain demographic.
It happened in South Africa, right?
South Africa, it happened. Yeah. Zimbabwe, it happened. Yeah. I think it happened in Zimbabwe first.
Yeah.
And then in South Africa, it's still an ongoing process. I know with, what's that? That's the name of that street. I know the new name. I saw some. Oh, yeah, it was called William Nicol, I think, at first. Now it's known as Winnie Mandela Street. Yeah.
So. Why can't we name these old places after black people that turned up here in the early years.
Yeah.
Like, why can't we have Swilly? Why can't Swilly have a street?
Exactly. People contributed to the actual building of infrastructure and stuff like that. Because I know that's what... Infrastructure is one thing I'm big on.
Yeah.
When it comes to who labored on it. In fact, not even just infrastructure, but just who's done the work.
Well, a lot of things around Wellington, I saw this really cool video on YouTube, and it was a New Zealand one, and a lot of the old buildings and stuff around Wellington in particular were built by prison labour.
Yeah.
So aren't we naming after some prisoners, maybe?
it wouldn't hurt, actually, to do that, because...
And acknowledge the people who did the work.
That's exactly what I'm always about, man. Just acknowledge the person who did it. Like, he did the work. I mean, why do we then punish people who did the crime and we acknowledge that they did the crime? If Leah is the one who robbed the bank, she's been sentenced to 10 years. Leah is the one who robbed the bank. But when she built a bridge or something and was key, was instrumental in that, we can't even name a section of the bridge after her. Nah, man. Come on. Really need to wake up on that one.
Now, I would like my dad's surname. Don't call it Leah, call it Lupala. Stamp Tanzania right here. So like during all of this period of time, and you know, we got a lot of things going on geopolitically.
Yeah.
And I think that it's, I don't know, I just think that denying that the money, majority of the money from the British Empire, because they were growing sugar from investors who owned slaves, and then we say, oh, we got nothing to do with it. I think it's disingenuous.
It is. You know, every time when someone makes a discovery, shocking discovery, they always say, follow the...
money.
Follow the money.
Follow the money.
We know where the money came from.
Yeah.
And we can't be in denial of it. And I'll also talk about the Picton statue. No, it has not been removed to this day.
It's still there.
It's still there. It was voted to be removed. But
who wants to keep...
A quick search just says to me, no,
well,
the statue of Thomas...
Well, maybe I need to put up some of these things. I put up today on our Instagram and on our... Facebook, the Robbie Shilliam's work. Now, Robbie Shilliam wrote the book Black Pacific.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if you scroll to like about halfway through, then he starts really talking about, you know, people that were here as whalers and sealers and black people that have just been here. They've been here the whole time.
Yeah.
And some have intermarried, and I've put an invite out to anybody in the Wellington region who has a black ancestor in their background. Come talk to us.
We need it.
Tell us your stories. Come into the light. Come out the closet.
You know, funny thing. I'm going to circle back on the Picton thing.
Yeah.
I always get into this rabbit hole and just like always start looking at the headlines of what's what's been happening.